You've gotten used to hearing people talk about local food. Today we'll talk about local fiber, or something along those lines. Fiber as in what makes up the clothing you wear. The fashion industry is known for splashy presentations and runway shows, not so much for sustainability. Into that gap steps a Northern California nonprofit called Fiber Shed, which is focused on a full cycle of obtaining fiber from the land and returning it there once it's outlived its usefulness as clothing. Rebecca Burgess is founder and executive director of FiberShed, based in Sonoma County. She's also the chair of the board of the Carbon Cycle Institute. We'll talk about both of those roles. Rebecca, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Give us the creation story. What led you to start FiberShed almost 10 years ago?
I began the project with a background in having just gotten back from Southeast Asia and seeing some of where our industry had gone and some of the impacts to water, air, and communities. And I started to write a book around, you know, what opportunities we had in North America for supplanting our reliance on some of the things that I was seeing overseas. And I looked down at my own clothes, and I realized that I was really no keen representative of these core values of supplanting my own reliance on these opaque supply chains. And so I started to evaluate for myself, you know, what would change look like. So I treated myself as a guinea pig to an experiment that lasted about 18 months. And I basically worked with farmers in our community in the northern central California region. It was about 19 counties. Farmers, ranchers, artists, hand spinners, weavers, knitters, cut and sew people, myself. I'm a trained weaver and a natural dyer. And we developed a prototype wardrobe from everything that was grown. The dyes were grown, the fiber was grown, all the labor was of the community. And we made a prototype wardrobe that I wore for 1 year that was locally grown. And
all of your clothing then came from within, what, 150 miles or something?
It was a 150-mile wardrobe, mm-hmm. Underwear, socks, bathing suit included.
Wow. How hard did that get, or how easy did it get?
It was surprising in that there's no lack of raw material. We raise about 3.1 million pounds of wool every year in California. About one-third of that is fine enough to compete with what you would see coming out of Australia or New Zealand. And a myriad of that that's not in that one-third that you might say is competitive with, base layer quality material we see in Smart Wool or other companies that use those Australian, New Zealand supply chains. A whole suite of the wool in our state is from these beautiful colored sheep. We have gray, brown, black, like wool growing off the back of these beautiful animals that actually doesn't need to be dyed. You need no toxic effluent to make a beautiful brown sweater or a gray pair of wool pants.
Interesting. So the color essentially comes with the wool in the first place.
It does. And we actually have color-grown cotton raised by a farmer named Sally Fox in the Capay Valley in Yolo County. She raises, and she's a classical cotton seed breeder, and she produces cotton that's been around for millennia. But it got pushed under the radar when we developed cotton equipment, industrial cotton equipment that was focused on white cotton. We didn't want to contaminate our machines with brown cotton. These are old ideas, right? But this is what ended up happening. A lot of the colored fiber that you don't need to dye, whether it be cotton or wool, does not move through industrial supply chains, and thus you and I typically wouldn't have access to it in a store if we were choosing clothing items. We have to dye things that are dyed with 60% of the dyes we use are azo dyes, which are fossil carbon-based with heavy metals. They're endocrine disruptors, they're autoimmune disruptors. They have a lot of serious problems for human health, but we continue to rely on them because we're not really relying on what nature grows. And this one-year wardrobe challenge really taught me that we are, in California, swimming in fiber. We just have no way to metabolize it, and it's an analog. If you were trying to start a slow food restaurant and you had all these great farmers you wanted to work with, but you had no kitchen, no pots, no pans, no stove. It's basically the equivalent of what we're dealing with in the fiber system. We have no kitchen. or not enough kitchens at the right scale.
Rebecca Burgess is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of Fiber Shed based in Sonoma County, essentially doing kind of what we did with local food, but with local fiber for clothing. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So to come back to the metaphor you were just using, so it's like we have all this food and no kitchen or not enough kitchens. So what are the kitchens in this metaphor?
The kitchens are textile mills. They would wash the material. So in the case of wool, alpaca, they would clean it. They would then, the milling systems then comb it. Just think of your hair when it gets knotted. You need to comb it. You don't want to wear matted sweaters made out of compressed fiber off of an animal's back. You want it combed and then spun. So the spinning is very important. And then you need to knit it or weave it. And those phrases I'm using sound really simple, but there's multiple scales of production. You could do this all at home with equipment that's been created, you know, hundreds of years ago. You could also get industrial equipment that takes this conversation to a whole new level in terms of production. Those are the systems. And we don't have cotton gins in California that process organic cotton. So that's another key piece that we would need for our kitchen, so to speak. We need to remove the seeds from our organic cotton and be able to use that fiber to comb it, spin it, knit it, weave it, all of which are needed pieces of infrastructure for our region.
So and what can Fiber Shed do to encourage the location of operations like that?
That is actually something we've been working on since 2013. We did produce something called a California Wool Mill Vision. It's freely downloadable on our website, and it's a 65-page document with an extensive pro forma understanding what it would take to build these facilities. Now, in 2014, the investor community was very clear that food was hot, but fiber was not. And so we had some uphill journey to kind of convey that this is a critical issue. And we've seen this issue brought forward in the IPCC discussions, like we have to meet certain caps on our emissions. And if the textile industry does what it continues to do without making change to business as usual, it will be close to one-third of our emissions budget by 2050. So meaning our clothing will take up approximately one-third of our global emissions budget by 2050 if we do nothing to this industry. So people are starting to wake up to the nexus between regional economic development, the need for good, high-paying livelihoods in our home communities, that nexus with climate, and helping farmers and ranchers create direct markets in our home communities, and also to be able to wear clothing that's compostable, that doesn't basically shed microplastics into our oceans and terrestrial systems. So we're getting to this point now with looking at where to put milling systems back on the landscape, and we're really in the throes of that right now. Our goal is to have milling systems on the ground, at least a more advanced set of milling systems in the next 2 years. We just have to do it. And we have a team working on it. It's something we've been slugging away at for many years.
So this is a very natural sort of wardrobe we're talking about here, though. I mean, we're not talking about polyester or any of the other synthetics we've come to know over the years, which involve, as we learned a few years ago, things like sulfuric acid and extrusion and all sorts of odd processes.
Good point. Yes, this is clothing that comes from plants or animals. This is clothing that does not come from fossil carbon sources, meaning we do not extract it from the lithosphere and then refine it into nylon, acrylic, or polyester. None of that. We don't really have the environmental space anymore to continue those industries. So we need to transform how we're wearing clothing and what we're wearing. And the how of it is also, you know, we need to consider wearing our clothes for longer. We wear our clothes on average for 60% less time than we did in the mid-90s. We're consuming at higher rates, and that's because textiles, the price of a textile has not gone up with the price of other consumer goods. Clothing has actually become relatively less expensive, and that's because we continue to exploit other parts of the world for this process to be, so we can have clothing on our back. So So the whole work right now is to say, look, we need to move off fossil carbon. We need to move to plant and animal-based fibers. And once we get these materials on our skin, yes, they might cost a bit more, but those are the true costs. Those are not externalized costs. And so, yes, we need to wear our clothing out. We need to wear it well. And we need to have timeless pieces of clothing that will really serve us in what we're trying to do as we walk through the world. And the design of our clothing might even need to be modified, I would say, to be more form-fitting, more heritage, more heirloom textiles.
So we're really talking about a fairly radical revolution in fashion here then.
Well, to a degree, yes. I mean, it's a revolution that reflects our heritage. But yes, we do. We need modern performance wear clothing that honors our ability to produce our own clothing and it honors our climate. So yeah, it will be a bit of a revolution when it comes.
How fast do you think it'll come, Rebecca?
At the pace of social impact investment. I mean, it's really about people waking up and saying, I want clothing that is non-toxic. I want to eat food that's non-toxic. I want to wear clothing that's non-toxic. You know, we all live on one planet. Chemicals issued in one watershed in the world end up permeating our biosphere. There's no place you can go do toxic things and have it not impact all of us. Basically, this has come to the point where we need to treat the planet like a whole system. And I think when that cultural wake-up occurs, people will call for it. And when consumer demand says, yes, this is what I want, and social impact investors, you know, triple bottom line investors who are thinking people, planet, profit all together, as they step into this space, you hit a certain inflection point where these things become viable. The organizers and coordinators like myself and the business advisors, we can only do so much. We can put the plan on the table. We can tell you how much it's going to cost. We can tell you where it needs to go. We can tell you how many people will be employed. But, you know, it's a plan until someone wants to operationalize it.
We are talking with Rebecca Burgess, the executive director of Fiber Shed, a nonprofit in Northern California, attempting to make sure that fiber comes out of the land, stays close to the land, and goes back to the land when we are done with it. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Karen in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you. I am a wearable artist, clothing designer, as well as a sewing teacher in Grants Pass, and I was wondering, are you selling yardage of textiles?
Oh, that's a great question. We have some yardage that's coming forward through a mill called the Houston Textile Mill. It's in Sacramento in Rancho Cordova, and they are producing what we call climate-beneficial wool yardage. Right now, I think you can pre-order that yardage directly from the rancher. Lonnie Estelle has a website right now. You could do a pre-order of yardage with her, and her website is Lonnie's Lana. It's L-A-N-I-S-L-A-N-A, lonnieslana.com. And Houston Textiles is the weaving mill, and they are also right now producing a chambray, a beautiful organic cotton chambray that if you want to contact the mill, you could ask for samples when that chambray has been issued. They're weaving the sample yardage right now, probably today.
Okay, so this raises the question then about how you're able to spread the idea to the fashion industry. And it sounds like some people have already come to you for help with sourcing materials that they're trying to make sure are natural and stay close to the land.
Yes, we've worked with the North Face, and they are home headquarters. We're in Alameda, California, so very close to where I live. And I was able to work with teams of designers, product designers, and also their sustainability team. And they coordinated with our organization, supply chain, and a project called a Climate Beneficial Wool Project. And you just heard me mention Climate Beneficial Wool with the last caller. This is a project to develop carbon farm plans, basically looking at working landscapes as places where we can sink carbon out of the atmosphere and into the soil to create naturally more productive soils, basically a way to ameliorate climate change while building resilience to it. Carbon-rich soils hold more water. Carbon-rich soils, like I said, are naturally more productive. So we've been working with a team at the Carbon Cycle Institute and the California Resource Conservation Districts, as well as partner biologists, to develop these carbon farm plans where we implement a suite of 35 practices that help create more what we call carbon drawdown. The North Face was very interested in their climate and improving their climate impact, working regionally, getting to know ranchers and farmers. So they did a beautiful thing. They actually front-loaded money to help the rancher develop a composting system. They've also every year since paid an additional sum on the wool that they're purchasing from this ranch, and that money is going to put in pollinator corridors, shelter belts, windbreaks, silvopasture. Silvopasture is when you put trees back in a pasture where animals graze. And this wool then, once purchased at a premium, tethered to these land management shifts, which are tethered to climate impact, this brand was then able to produce, using an American supply chain, which was brilliant, a beautiful set of garments that have now come out. So they have made an infinity scarf, a beanie, and a beautiful wool coat, men and women's coat, and it's called the Cali Wool Project. And that's been a really exciting project for us because simultaneous to working with a large-scale transnational corporation such as the North Face, we have also been able to work with the supply chain. When we get the wool through the parts of the supply chain, we're able to take some of that wool, peel it off from the supply chain, and have it woven locally here, as I mentioned, at the Houston Textile Mill. So it's these relationships between transnational corporations and small artisanal businesses and ranchers where we've seen this really great work to basically, it's a win-win-win. Home sewers have access to this textile now, but you can also buy the wool at the North Face website. It's really exciting to create this level of transparency and connectedness in our community. It's been a very gratifying experience.
It sounds like it. Rebecca, I almost have to go. So one quick question then for, I'm sure a lot of people's minds is like they want to be able to help the environment. Will the cost be very different, though? Will clothing cost a lot more under this system if we all do it?
Per item, it will, but if you, we call this cost per wear. If you wear your clothing longer, so if you purchase a $30 sweater and you only, if you only wear it three times, you know, it's maybe like, I don't know, $10 per wear, what have you. If you wear a $300 sweater and you wear it 1,000 times, you know, whatever that is, 30 cents per wear. It's really about investing in something that you use. So there's an old adage, I'm too poor to buy cheap. My great-grandmother used to say that. So that's where we got to go. Spend and invest in things that last.
All right. We are talking with Rebecca Burgess, the executive director and founder of Fiber Shed, chair also of the board for the Carbon Cycle Institute. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.